I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening and all your support.
Yeah, thanks. We love it.
We do. Very much.
How are you, Dad?
I'm very good. I've been recommending the podcast to all sorts of eccentric people.
Are they listening?
Yes, they've all been listening. So far, most of the people I recommended it to seem to like it, which is very good. But it's been an interesting week for me. It's my birthday this week.
Yeah, it was your birthday this week. Mm.
I'm not letting on how old I am.
Spring chicken.
Would that I were.
Baby.
I had lunch with my accountant yesterday. He confessed he was 5 years younger than me. I said, I hope you're not going to retire. He said, no, I'm not going to retire any more than you're not going to retire. Mm. So
You're very youthful looking though, Dad. I bet he doesn't look like young like you.
No, he doesn't actually. No. I'm not being rude. He's a very, very nice man.
No, I don't. I'm just saying you are very youthful looking.
That's very kind of you.
You certainly don't look your age.
No.
It runs in the family. I look a lot younger than I am.
Yes, but I think that's rather nice. Hmm. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No. Not complaining.
It's a good thing. What else have I done this week? I went to see...
You had a drink with me on your birthday.
I did. That was very nice.
That was very nice.
Glass of champagne.
Very nice.
And I went to the new production of The King and I at the Palladium.
Oh, of course you did. Yeah, and?
Which was terrific.
Loved it.
She was absolutely wonderful. She sang the socks off it. The man is not quite as good. He's good, but you can't forget Yul Brynner. You just cannot forget Yul Brynner. Mm. And of course, it wasn't Deborah Carr singing in the film. You know, she was voiced. But this girl was utterly sensational. And it's also a terrific score.
Yeah.
You know, it's a Rodgers and Hammerstein score. We've got Shall We Dance, Getting to Know You. It's packed with songs that you can hum, you know. Mm-hmm. Whistle a Happy Tune. As a friend sent me a note who'd given up his tickets to watch England... said we certainly weren't whistling a happy tune at the end of that.
Oh yeah, you went on Wednesday.
Yeah,
commiserations to the kingdom.
Yeah.
Did you go on the Trump march yesterday?
No, I did not go on the Trump march yesterday.
It's a good march.
Oh well, I
we
find
were allowed out of work to go, but I had too much work to do.
Well,
I don't believe in the cause.
I quite like old Trump in a lot of ways. He's
Dad, I think you need to be careful about
that. I do. There's quite a lot to like about him. I take all the points, but he is, as I think somebody said in the paper this week, he does at least make himself clear.
I don't think that's going to go down well. I'm going to steer away from the Trump
In the Me Too generation, no, it wouldn't.
It would not. This is... Don't be alienated by my father's opinions.
No, please don't. I'm unreconstructed. But I'm very careful these days, not to be, not to be too terrible.
Good.
No, I didn't go on the Trump march. I did go to the Ratican Society annual dinner, which was very good. It was held at the Oxford and Cambridge Club because I was the host, and I had to give Julian Fellowes, Lord Fellowes, his vice presidential seal.
Was he there?
Yeah, he was sitting beside me.
Oh,
and
he's one of our clients.
Hmm. Yeah, I didn't know that.
You didn't know that. I should have told you before, and then you could have said he's met Betsy. In fact, do you know he's a huge Daxon fan? Like five Daxons.
Yes, I know he has.
And every year they have a big Daxon party.
Yes, I knew they had
and
a Daxon.
Betsy's been invited twice, but I've never been able to get down there. But also, she hates other dogs, so she just hates.
Yes,
it. But they came to our office, and him and his wife were very taken with my
weasel. Yeah, yes. The wife wasn't there. I've met her before.
Hmm.
And I remember talking to him about Daxons.
Yeah,
and
love
them. Anyway, they're doing a film of Downton now, aren't they?
Yeah, one of my clients just got cast in it.
Oh, great. Great.
Exciting.
Bonneville's back and Maggie Smith's back.
I think they've been trying to get it off the ground for ages, so it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it's a 10-week shoot.
Mm. I think they just finished shooting the last ever series of Downton, though.
Yeah.
Is Downton still on? I don't know, anyway.
Yeah. But it's a movie that they're going to shoot in the autumn,
yeah.
As I gather. Yeah. What about your week?
Yeah, it was good. I'll tell you afterwards.
Okay.
You can do a...
Okay. Well, you may remember that when we did the last podcast, I was recommending a book called The Quaker by Liam Machovany.
I do remember.
And Liam has... I think it's an astonishingly good book, and I reviewed it in the Mail in the Summer Reads collection. I'm a huge admirer of Machovany's anyway. I think he and Rankin are the best of the tartan noir. The, you know, Scots, and Rankin does Edinburgh, but Machovany does Glasgow. And he's fictionalised a real case, which was called, the killer was called Bible John. So we
ought that's to, what we're going to talk about today.
That's what we're going to talk about today.
So that's it. Today, everyone, you'll know, if you listened last time, you'll know that we had discussed this in the podcast, but this week we're doing Bible John.
We have to cast our mind back half a century. The year is 1968. Glasgow is still pretty ruined by the impact of the bombing during the war and the fact that the old tenements are gradually being knocked down to be replaced by what would then turn out to be new, worse tenements, great tower blocks, which now have been knocked down as well. But
do you want to explain what a tenement is, just in case anyone doesn't know?
A tenement is a Scottish set of flats. You enter through what's called a close, and you go up stone steps, and that usually has three or four floors, with one flat on either side of each floor. It's a sort of cheap housing. I'm familiar with them because I was born in one, in Greenock on the Clyde, and I was born on the ground floor. They get slightly bigger as you go down the buildings until the ground floor flats are the biggest. My mother was born in the same tenement, but she was born on the top floor. And gradually, as they moved down the tenement, they had slightly more room. And as a child, they had ranges. Nobody knows what a range is now. It was a coal-fired, basically a cooking implement. It had an oven, and you could cook on top of it, and you stoked it up with coke or coal, and used to have a bed in the kitchen. In with straw mattress.
Oh my word!
Yeah, straw
well,
beds.
Did it have a curtain by it?
Yes,
like one of those.
That's
ones
right. Yeah, you could draw a curtain around it. And I used to stay in the front room. They had also had a press bed. It was known as a press bed, which is Scott's name for a closet. And you open the door, and there was just this mattress, which was of course straw covered with a sheet. And so to make the bed, you had to hit it with a stick.
To make it flat,
yes.
Because that can't have been good for your asthma.
I don't think it was, but maybe it wasn't much in the way of a choice. But what's important to remember about this time 50 years ago is that times were so very different. I mean, I was 23, working as a journalist, went back to Scotland occasionally, not as often. But Glasgow was still riven with gang violence, graffiti everywhere, very territorial. But this particular killing, or killings, there were three, absolutely hypnotised the city, utterly. And yet it began in a very low-key way. We're not talking about the Yorkshire Ripper here, but we are talking about a man who came to capture the imagination of a city and to provoke one of the largest manhunts in Scottish criminal history. It's February 1968. And a young woman, an auxiliary nurse called Patricia Docker, who's 25, and has just separated from her husband. Single mother of one. She's staying with her parents. And she tells the parents that she's going to the Majestic Ballroom, which is regarded as a rather more upmarket ballroom. in Glasgow at the time, because Glasgow was still very keen on dancing. It was a very popular pastime. Ever since the jive was imported from America, there had been lots and lots of dancing in Glasgow. It was relatively cheap entertainment. Anyway, the problem was that Patricia Docker told a fib. She wasn't going to the Majestic Ballroom. She was actually going to the Barrowland Ballroom because it was over 25's night. And it was a good place to meet a man. And she was, after all, separated from her husband. And so she goes to the rather raunchier ballroom, which had this huge sign.
Barrowlands is still a venue, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Yeah, but it had gone through a number of incarnations. It had been there, and then it burnt down, and then they opened it again. Very quite glamorous in its own way for the day. I recently went to the Tower Ballroom in Blackpool, which was extraordinarily beautiful. Although,
I'm a bit sad that dancers don't really exist like that anymore. We have to go to nightclubs.
Yes. No, these were...
I don't want to do.
No, but this was so different. You know, they shut it down at 11 o'clock. You know, everybody had to...
Sounds ideal.
You know, you had to get the bus home, you know. There was no... and...
Patricia was on her way to Barrowlands then.
And she did. She got to Barrowland. But, you see... Her telling her parents that she was going to the Majestic sent the police in the completely wrong direction. They spent 3 days interviewing people who'd been at the Majestic when she'd never actually been there.
So Patricia didn't come home?
No, unfortunately she didn't. She was found very close to her home in a doorway. She was naked. She had been hit around the head a great deal, but the cause of death was strangulation, was a ligature, probably a belt. Her handbag, watch and clothes were all missing, never to be found. But the handbag and part of the watch were later found in the River Cart by police divers.
Is that in Glasgow, the River Cart?
River Cart, yes. Cart. Absolutely. Cart. Now, there's long been an argument about whether Patricia was sexually assaulted. It is often reported that she was.
Did they not have rape kits back then?
There was no evidence at the time. If you go back and look at the contemporary record, there is no evidence of a sexual assault. There is, however, evidence of it in the subsequent killings.
Okay.
Now, whether that was... He was interrupted. What happened? Clearly, she'd fallen for someone she met at Barrowland. I don't think there can be any objection to that. They were eventually to call them the Barrowland killings before the final killing. And there's no question at all that she was an attractive young woman. Plenty of pictures of her on the net. She looks rather... old-fashioned, of course, compared to now.
What's her name? Patricia?
Patricia Docker. If you look on Bible John, you'll find her there too. She looked a little like a singer of the day.
My internet's not working. Carry on.
Never mind. There's no doubt at all that she was found... When she was found, she'd been killed shortly after she left Barrowland. And the presumption was that, well, perhaps it was a one-off. It's interesting that one of the things that links these three killings is all the women looked remarkably similar.
She's sweet-looking.
Yes. She had dark hair, as they all did, all the victims did. And... She was very much of the time.
A nice smile.
Yes. By all accounts, a particularly nice lady. Now, one of the many complications of Bible John comes into play. The killer does not strike again for 18 months. Now, there's been all kinds of speculation about why that was. Had he been imprisoned for a minor crime? Had he been a traveller? Had he gone to live in the South? What was, you know, why? Because normally, if you're talking about a serial killer, it tends to escalate.
Yeah.
It doesn't tend to go a long gap. But in this case, it did. And that had another impact on the Patricia Docker investigation, because it took a very long time for the police to link her killing with the second victim.
Okay.
Partly because there were no leads to Patricia's killer. All the possibles had gone cold. The people they talked to at the Majestic, including one man who said he had danced with her at the Majestic, when in fact he hadn't, you know, another false lead. And so they scaled down the inquiry until a second woman, again, recently separated, this time 32-year-old mother of three, called Jeanette MacDonald. Sorry, Jemima MacDonald. Again, seeking, I suppose, a good time. She went to Barrowland, where she was seen dancing with a young, well-spoken man of about 25 to 35, with short, dark brown hair with fair streaks, about 6'2". She left the dance hall and was seen walking in the direction of a home, of her home, with a man. It's now the early hours of Sunday morning. She'd gone on the Saturday night. Her sister, Margaret O'Brien, who was babysitting the three children, was worried when she didn't come home. Then rumours began to circulate that some children in the area had found a body in an abandoned tenement nearby. Not surprisingly, I think, Margaret thought, oh, it couldn't possibly be. I'm sure she's, you know, found somebody, or, you know, she'll come back eventually. And it wasn't until the Monday morning that she went out into the street and discovered, because in those days children played in the street, particularly in Glasgow, and there were plenty of them about, you know, with short trousers and dirty pullovers and big grins. And she said to them, what's this about a body? And they say, oh, yes, oh, follow us. So she does.
What, so the police hadn't come? She just found her...
She found her sister.
Oh, that's awful.
She found her sister's battered body lying face down in what was about an abandoned tenement, disused. She was... her shoes and stockings were lying beside her, but she was clothed. However, she had certainly been raped, beaten very badly around the head, and strangled with her stockings. Her handbag was taken, again. One of the things that links the killings, and in certainly is one of the distinguishing features of this case, is the victims looked remarkably alike. They were all dark-haired, and they were all menstruating at the time of death. This becomes important because the killer took some pleasure in leaving sanitary towels beside the bodies under the left arm of the last victim.
That is so weird.
It is.
And fucked up. Mm. Not that I like to swear on the podcast, but
no,
that's a bad one.
It is. It's one of the remarkable qualities of the case that it took some time for, remember, this is a very male police department. There are very few female officers. It's 1969. There are very, very few female officers. It's a very male police department.
Yeah.
And this detail took some time to, how can we put it politely, to lodge in the minds of the male officers.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't... Now, if you'd had a female detective or detectives, they would have jumped to the conclusions much more quickly, but the men didn't.
Yeah, also, yeah. Yeah. It's a different time. It's really, like, kind of spoken about that stuff.
So. Yes. But it's important because it was some time before the police linked Patricia Docker and Jemima. It looked like two different killings in some ways. One naked body, one clothed body.
But similar in other ways.
But eventually, the police realised that the connection was Barrowland. And they sent a dozen undercover officers, including, by all accounts, two women, not before time, to go to Barrowland every Thursday and Saturday, the over-25s night. But it is... I'm not, again, not criticising the police, but there was a very misogynist attitude. These young women were disposable, And now we would find that horrifying if you think about the Yorkshire Ripper when there was, prostitutes were targeted. These were perfectly respectable women. It's just they'd happened to be separated from their husbands.
Yeah.
And went to Barrowland for, quotes, a good time.
Yeah, which is allowed.
It's a harmless enough thing. But Jemima's killing was in August 1969. And on Halloween night, that October, the third victim was to meet her end. Helen Puttock was 29. She went to Barrowland with her sister, Jean, and they met two men called John. This is the only eyewitness.
The sister.
All four leave Barrowland together. One of the Johns gets on the bus at Glasgow Cross, and the other two women and the other John get into a taxi to take first Jean home and then Helen Puttock. On the taxi ride, during the taxi ride, the man they're sharing it with,
the John,
proceeds to quote the Old Testament at great length, also accusing Barrowland of being a den of iniquity, saying that he never drinks, especially not at Hogmanay, I pray instead. And this is where the nickname
Bible John
came from. Now, it's worth bearing in mind that Helen Puttock's sister Jean was almost certainly fairly drunk. Her recall was in and out. Nevertheless, she became the police's only possible witness.
Oh, that's so awful. Poor woman.
Helen Puttock's body...
Can you imagine being...
Was found...
Leaving your sister in the car.
Was found behind the tenement that she lived in.
He always leaves the bodies near to where they live.
Always. He's taking them home, you see. There's something about... In the modern day, you'd get a geographical profiler on no time.
ASAP.
Absolutely. And you'll start putting pins in the map.
Yeah. And they're all coming from the point of Barrowland.
And
that
so there's obviously circles, aren't there? Bound to be. I mean, I remember vividly when David Cantor's book about Duffy and Mulcahy came out. He had pioneered geographical profiling in this country.
Is that the Mapping Murder book?
That's right, the Mapping Murder, yeah. And a very good book too, incidentally. It's an extraordinary... Jean's dropped off. The man later become known as Bible John, and Helen go on.
The taxi driver must be the other eyewitness.
Yes, but I don't think he ever came forward. Anyway, in the early hours of Halloween, 31st of October, she's found. She's partially naked. She's beaten around the face. And she's strangled with her tights. The other significant thing in this killing, however, is that there's a bite mark on her left leg. She has obviously put up a considerable fight. She's tried to escape. There are grass stains because there's a, you know,
grassy bank.
She's a fierce struggle. Again, the handbag has disappeared. Again, she's menstruating. And again, a sanitary towel is left beside the body, under her left arm, as some kind of mark. It's a signature.
That's so weird.
It's why it makes it interesting to talk to you about it, because this is a very unusual case.
Yeah. How would he know?
Well, I presume he must have asked them.
You'd have to be insane. Like, I can't imagine any scenario where that would...
That emerged.
As soon as a man said that to me, who I just met, I'd be like, see ya.
Yeah, I'll be back. I'll see you one day. Yeah. Yes, but perhaps these were different times. Perhaps different sensibilities.
That makes it even worse. Now it's more normal for people to talk about stuff like that. Back then, I can't imagine anybody having a conversation about that.
No.
Ever.
No.
Why would you?
No. I can't imagine it. And yet, it can't be an accident.
No, God, it can't be an accident. Unless he'd sort of...
Well, he has some kind of sixth sense?
No, yeah, well, that, or that he'd, like, well, maybe. But or he'd sort of tracked the woman for longer and no one knew that he'd done that.
That is possible. Especially as they all seem to be relatively regular at the Barrowland.
Yeah, if they've come there recently, they're all in the same geographical area.
They all look alike.
He knows the tenements, they look alike. He could easily have followed them. Like, if that's a thing you're specifically looking out for with somebody, you could work it out. I mean, you'd have to be, like, very particular, but obviously he was, so...
You'd also have to be very strange, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's what I mean by particular.
Yeah. I mean, it is a very strange fetish.
Yeah, but it obviously relates to something.
It does, but unfortunately, we'll never know what it relates to.
No.
Because the sister, Helen's sister, Jean, gave the police what became one of the most famous composites...
Yeah, I just looked at it.
...ever created. It's the first time a composite was released by the Scottish Police Department, by Glasgow Police. The picture became famous, but there are a couple of real problems with it.
I'm just looking at it.
One is that it makes the killer look rather like a film star.
Yes, he's quite handsome.
Yes. I don't think that was probably true. And it also throws doubt on the sister's testimony.
Which was?
That she helped them create the composite. I suspect that that recollection was blurred. But what is absolutely true is that although they devoted... 100 detectives, they took 50,000 statements, and the sister did 300 identity parades.
Oh my God, poor woman. You can't, like, that's pointless.
And she never picked out...
Of course she didn't.
...Michael John. I'm not saying that she could have or should have done, I'm simply
they
saying...
They never should have made her do 300 identity parades.
Well, they had nowhere else to go. I mean, they were literally struggling.
Yeah, but it's not fair to lay that on someone.
But that composite, there was pictures of it across the city. every post office you went into, every front page.
He must have been laughing all the way to the post office, like, yeah. Oh, that doesn't look anything like me.
I rather agree, you know. But...
did he kill again after that?
No.
He didn't.
Now...
Maybe it did look like him then.
A lot of people have speculated that the reason he didn't kill again... was that he moved away, which leads us to the Who is Bible John industry, which is considerable. Although they sent this team of detectives to Barrowland looking for a man they thought might be Bible John, they never found someone for the sister to identify. And the trail went truly cold. It's important to remember now a Scottish killer that we've dealt with before, Peter Tobin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Peter Tobin left Scotland and moved to Brighton shortly after the third Barrowland killing. And if you look at the photographs of Tobin and you look at the photographs of Bible John, the composite of Bible John, photographs of Tobin at the time, there are some similarities. But I've never been convinced by that. One of the detectives on the case, who was to retire as a detective superintendent, was fairly convinced that it could have been Tobin because he'd moved to the south. Professor David Wilson, whom I've worked with on television documentaries, is in his own mind convinced that Tobin is Bible John. I'm far from certain of that, partly because Tobin killed in a totally different way.
We talked about it briefly in our Tobin podcast, I think.
We did. I mean, Tobin attacked
the ordinary abductor.
That's right. Tobin buried two victims, you may remember, under the sand pit in the house in Margate, and buried Angelica Cluck under the confessional
in the church.
He also used a knife on all three victims. The three Barrowland victims...
Were they menstruating?
Nope.
Well, then.
And they were all strangled.
What, Tobin stabbed all his and Bible John strangled all his?
That's right. Now...
Geoffrey quite rightly said earlier before we started, you don't change your handwriting.
No, I don't think you do. Now, Tobin, of course, is in jail, as we know, and signally has never said or even admitted that he was Bible John. The senior detective on the case, it was called Joe Beattie, suspected that Bible John was a policeman. I wouldn't be surprised.
The detective on the case at the time?
The detective on the case at the time suspected they were dealing with a policeman.
Or a pharmacist, because maybe he sold sanitary towels to all these women.
It's possible. One of the things that wasn't put together in the profile, nowadays that profile would be voluminous, wouldn't it? And you'd be looking at that as an absolutely signal issue.
Yeah.
In what are we dealing with here? Let's look at... No. One of the things, because of Jean, Helen's sister, said, oh, he's got overlapping front teeth. So they go round every dentist in Glasgow looking for men with overlapping front teeth in sizes. Whether or not he had overlapping front teeth...
She can't remember that.
No, she's in the back of a cab for about 15 minutes with a man who's spouting the Bible. She's certainly had a drink or three.
Also, I mean, I've been known in the past, and I'm not a bad person, to have someone come into our office for work experience and be so busy, they've worked with us for like 3 weeks, and a year later I'll meet them and they'll be like, I worked with you. And I'll be like, did you?
I know.
It's like your brain can only take in so much information at one time, or like remember so much at one time.
And I mean, it is, I mean, we are talking about a very long time ago, half a century. We are talking about a police department that was doing its best. It didn't link the killings at once. It did then link them. And it never closed the file. They exhumed the body of a man called John McInnes, who committed suicide in 1980 at the age of 41, and attempted to get a DNA match on the semen they found on Helen's body. But they didn't. It was inconclusive. There was speculation that another Scottish killer called Angus Sinclair might have been involved, but again, there was no coherent evidence. What makes it fascinating is that it's a vivid case with no conclusion.
Mm.
Mostly, we have a conclusion, don't we? You know,
I can see why that man would have fictionalised it then.
Well, it's fictionalised, and he does a very interesting thing, and let's pay tribute to Liam here. He suggests there wasn't one Bible John. There may have been one who procured for the other.
Well, it's interesting that those girls got picked up together. I know the other one went home, but I would have made far more of trying to find out who the man was that Jean was with.
Yes.
Because they would have had to spend the evening as a four.
Yes, they would. And it's also interesting that one of the persistent rumours about this case, and it's never gone away, is that someone in the hierarchy of the police shut down the inquiry. There was corruption somewhere, and they suspected it might have been an officer, and they didn't want that to come out. That rumour has never, ever gone away.
Hmm.
So, and interestingly, McIlvany's book also brings that element into the case. He obviously fictionalizes names, but the cases are identical. And I think it's one of those abiding mysteries. It's difficult to underestimate, looking back, just how dramatic the impact of those three Barrowland killings was on Glasgow at the time.
Yeah.
It was very, very dramatic. It was everywhere. And it helped to, perhaps give Glasgow its dangerous reputation, which the gangs had already sustained. Glasgow was a dangerous place to be. It isn't now. I remember you and I going there. You went to Merchant City and got the most extraordinary Afghan coat.
I've still got it.
Crikey.
Yeah, well, I used to really like vintage Segway. I used to love vintage clothes. We went on holiday there and I bought the most amazing. It was red suede with a sheepskin trim.
Yes, it was the most...
It was awesome.
It was. It was very, very good.
I bought most amazing clothes there and I felt so cool because no one I knew would have anything the same.
No.
Or even have access to the same vintage stores.
No.
I went through some very strong choices,
yes,
sartorially when I was younger.
But I do commend the Bible John case. It's unsolved. It's full of mysteries. It has dimensions which were never really properly explored at the time. And, well, you could be convinced by Professor David Wilson's opinion that it's Peter Tobin. It's a perfectly reasonable theory. Not one that I would personally subscribe to, but he's very convinced himself and has written a book about it. And it's also important to me because I was born, literally 19 miles away from Glasgow. And I lived in a tenement when I was small. And it was part of my kind of folk history.
Yeah.
You know, but... It is a fascinating case.
So interesting. Thanks, Dad. Well, there we go. That was Bible John.
Now to more cheerful subjects. What was your week like?
Really busy. I'm so busy at the moment and very tired. What did I do? I went to... see translations again at the National, which I enjoyed very much second time round. Saw my client Nathan in his play on the same night as England played football. Nathan was excellent. I didn't love the play, if I'm honest.
Mm.
But But Nathan was very good, so that was very nice. And I had dinner on Thursday with Luke Farrell from school and Richard Thomas, who is a manager that I work with, in a Taiwanese restaurant, which is very nice.
Where was it?
It's on Rupert Street.
Okay.
It's called XU or XU. I don't know how you pronounce it. Because I haven't eaten Taiwanese food before. It was delicious.
Was it, by Jove?
Yeah, it was so rich, though.
Yeah.
It was quite rich.
Yes.
I haven't been eating that exciting food, so it was a bit of a...
Yes.
But it was good. Yeah. And I've got even more things next week. Got press night of Alleluia, the new Alan Bennett play. Then Bridge.
Yeah.
Someone in that. I've got premiere of a movie one of my casting directors has cast, and Bart is doing, my client Bart is doing a play that's going up to Edinburgh, and it's got a preview in Hackney on Friday, so I'm going to go to that also.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah, I know, it never ends.
No, it never ends.
It never ends.
No.
I'm waiting for it to get quiet. To
some hope.
But,
what am I doing? I'm going to Harrogate.
Next weekend.
Next Saturday after lunch.
Yeah.
But we don't have a podcast that morning, so.
We do not.
I'm coming back on the Monday morning. I'm going to Cambridge tomorrow to see Dan, Susanna, and the girls.
Uh huh. That's nice. They're on holiday now.
I think they are. Yes.
No, they definitely are.
I'm afraid I'm really up against it. I've got a lot of reviewing to do, and for a variety of reasons, all the reviews have come in a great crunch together. So I'm desperately trying to read books as fast as I can.
Not easy.
No, it's not. And I'm reading one very good. It's one I really like, called In the Dark by a new young woman writer called Cara Hunter. But there's another very, some very interesting ones. And I've got 20 thrillers, and I've got a week to do three. So, you know.
Blimey heck, Dad.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, I've got a lot on.
and then there's the other stuff. You know, but it's, no, it's.
How was all your eps of your show have aired now, haven't they?
The first series of six episodes
and
have aired.
How did it go?
Well,
it went down well.
Everybody seems to like it. I haven't seen any figures.
We should try and get some.
Yeah, it'd be quite nice to find out what the cumulatives were.
Yeah.
By chance, I met a man in the street who'd worked on it with me for the channel, and it was helped with publicity and the marketing. And he was very cheerful about it and said it all went very well. They were very happy.
Yeah.
The second series of six is due to air early in the new year, but they're repeating the first six in November, December as a run-up to the second six.
Nice.
So that's what I'm told. And I haven't done the... I've had a lot of reactions to it, but not just to that one. A lot of reactions to the one I do for Sky Pick or Sky Living or, you know...
You did more...
World's Most Evil Killers. Britain's Most Evil Killers. I get a lot of reaction to that. And a very interesting conversation I was having yesterday, two different people, and they said, how do you deal with it? How do you deal with all this nastiness and gruesomeness? And I think it's, you have to be very detached. You have to be very cautious. You can't forget the images. I mean, we just can't. But if you can see it as something that you're trying to inform about and look at calmly. No, of course the victims and victims' families can't look at it like that, but I think that's what you're there for, to try and tell the story that people want to hear about. Incredible reactions.
Yeah. And you've been telling everyone to listen to our podcast.
I have been telling everyone to listen to our podcast. I'm very chuffed about it. I tell anybody. I don't stop people in the street, but... I'm sorely tempted to, if I thought it would work, I would do it, because I think it's, I mean, there are a lot of crime podcasts out there, but not many male and female, not many, I don't think there are any fathers and daughters doing this.
That's true. don't know that for sure. Well, no, but I don't think that.
I don't think so either, because I think I probably would have come across it. And it's just further evidence that this has become the most extraordinary phenomenon of interest. You know, literally. The oddest people will say to me, oh, didn't I see you last night on something or other? And you say, well, probably, I don't know, because I don't always watch them. Oh, yes, how do you do it? How do you get up with these awful people? You're very good, but it's awful people.
Morbid fascination, they're still watching it, though, aren't they?
They are.
That's the thing. They might be like, how do you handle it? Well, it's like, well, you sit down and watch it. How do you handle it?
Yes. One handles it as best one can.
You still find it fascinating, so.
Yep. It still keeps rolling in. One thing's for sure. Violent death never stops.
Mm.
Goes on and on and on. Which brings me to the obvious question. What are we going to do next?
I know. I was just looking. It's funny, actually. I just, when I Googled Bible John, it comes up with people also search for, and the first ones are Peter Tobin, and the second one is the Hammersmith Nude Murders.
Ah, well, I know a bit about the Hammersmith Nude Murders, because my colleagues who helped me make Murder by the Sea are making a documentary about that.
Well, perhaps we should start some kind of, like, Google, like, connect the dots with our choices. I don't know.
I'm happy to do the Hammersmith.
The Hammersmith Nude Murders were a series of murders in London, England in 1964 and 1965.
That's right.
The victims, all prostitutes, were found undressed in or near the River Thames, leading the press to nickname the killer Jack the Stripper.
That's right. And that's what the BBC documentary is called, Jack the Stripper.
Jack the Stripper.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there we go.
Which is currently being finished. It's been a long time in the making.
And the one after it,
mm-hmm.
where the man looks incredibly old and has a beard, which now would be hugely fashionable because it's massive, is called The Servant Girl Annihilator. He's American.
Yes.
He's a serial killer from Austin, Texas, who operated in 1884 and 1885.
Well, shall we have a go at Jack the Stripper?
Yeah, why not?
And there is a connection.
Yeah, Jack the Stripper it is. All right, Dad, thanks very much.
Thank you, Molly, very much too.
Yes, we'll speak to you soon.
Speak to you very soon.